You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
One of the great injustices of climate change is that the nations who caused it are not the ones who will suffer the most from its effects. Some of the world's poorest and most vulnerable people are already facing impacts from global warming. Poorer countries also need help to pursue a development path with lower greenhouse gas emissions. Estimates from the United Nations show that tens of billions of dollars of new public finance will be required to meet these needs. And a new report by the Pembina Institute recommends that Canada provide $4 billion a year to go towards urgent adaptation needs identified by the world's least developed countries. Claire Demers wrote the report, which is titled Our Fair Share. And Claire joins me today from Ottawa. Hello, Claire.
Hello.
How did you come up with the figure $4 billion?
What I did was, well, there's basically two pieces. So first was figuring out how much money is needed globally or in developing countries to deal with, there's basically two pieces. So one is adapting to climate change. So something like, you know, climate change is causing malaria to spread into new regions. And so what does the public health system need to help people cope with that? And then the other piece is reducing emissions. So, for example, the cost for a community to move from getting their electricity from coal to getting it from wind. And so when you add those up, there's been a lot of studies done of both of those elements by all kinds of, you know, the UN Development Program, the World Bank, the UN Climate Body. So there's a lot of really good research out there. So I kind of looked at those, and I came up with an average. And as you said in your intro, that's, you know, tens of billions of dollars of money that's going to be needed, of which a big fraction is going to need to be public. So money provided by governments as opposed to coming from companies. And then I looked at ways that you can share out responsibility between countries. And again, there's been a lot of good thinking going on into that. There's a lot of, you know, for example, the UN dues formula. A lot of people have heard that, you know, countries all have an assessment of how much they have to pay to the UN each year. Through the Montreal Protocol, which was an international environmental agreement to deal with the substances that were depleting the ozone layer, that has a formula for sharing out the effort between countries. So I took an average of those, and I just multiplied that by, you know, what's needed, and came out with basically Canada is going to be responsible for somewhere between 3% and 4%. That would be our fair share. And when you look at an average estimate of what the needs might be, I came to a range of $2 to $6 billion, so with $4 billion being the midpoint. And when you put that in context, you know, that's less than a 1% cut to the GST. So it's certainly something Canada can afford.
You mentioned some of the things that money could be used for. You talked about malaria prevention in areas as malaria spreads because of climate change. What are other ways in which this money you see could be used productively, constructively?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a huge need for adaptation to what's already, you know, basically, even if we were able to stop all new emissions of greenhouse gases tomorrow, we're still locked into about twice the climate change that we've already seen. And, you know, for vulnerable countries, countries that have a lot of low-lying land that's close to sea level, for example, or countries that are at risk of desertification, there's huge consequences that are already being felt. So, you know, for example, in Africa, the IPCC, which is the scientific body that does the, really the world's greatest authorities on climate science, they say by 2020, 75 to 250 million new people could be facing water shortages as a result of the climate change track that we're on. So it's very much that on the adaptation side. It's, you know, helping people get the life necessities that they need, strengthening infrastructure so that, you know, if you're seeing more frequent floods, that homes are able to withstand those. It's really targeted to those very vulnerable countries. There's a bunch in terms of public health that's needed, people's food security. You know, climate change has all kinds of impacts on agriculture. So all of those pieces. And then I think equally important is this whole question of reducing emissions and so helping basically developing countries leapfrog so that they don't follow the dirty technology path that we've followed with our reliance on fossil fuels, but go straight to, you know, generating electricity in a cleaner way right off the bat. So it's very much those two pieces.
Now, we're in a current economic crisis, and so people naturally who may not want to address this problem will come up with the argument, we can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond to that obstacle?
Yeah, you're right. That argument does come up, and there's really two responses. So one is all the evidence shows that dealing with climate change is cheaper than letting climate change happen. And that's not just on the sort of humanitarian level, but straight up economics. You know, just Nicholas Stern, who did the most authoritative review of this, he's a former chief economist of the World Bank, and he said, cost of tackling climate change is 1 to 2% of global GDP. Cost of climate change is 5 to 20 times greater than that. So there's clearly a solid economic argument for doing this. But the other piece is, this report really looks at the need in the context of UN climate negotiations that are happening right now. So by December of this year, countries are supposed to agree on a global climate deal, and that's going to happen hopefully in Copenhagen in December 18th is the deadline, and this is sort of the next phase of the Kyoto Protocol. So that is... it's critical this year that Canada gets its act together on this issue, but in fact, that agreement will take effect in 2012. So hopefully, and even the government will say in its own projections, you know, this economic crisis is going to be long over in 2012, and that's when we would start to need to supply this financing. So, and you know, when one of the reports that I looked at from the UN Secretariat was just very straightforward about this and said, now, this is a long-term global issue. In the context of climate change, the economic crisis is really, you know, it's just a blip. It's a short-term issue.
Are there ideas on the table already for ways that this money can be generated?
There are. There's a lot of really interesting ideas that countries have put on the table. Now, unfortunately, Canada isn't one of them. We haven't really come to the table with a position on this issue yet, and we certainly haven't come to the table with any offers for supplying the money that's needed. But many countries have. And so, for example, the group of least developed countries has said that we should have a levy on airline tickets, actually on airline emissions, so that people who are flying supply, they talk about €1 per ticket, or €4 if you're in business class, and put all of that money towards the Global Adaptation Fund. And their analysis being, you know, if you can afford to fly, you can afford to make a contribution to dealing with the impacts of climate change. And that model has actually already been used by France and a number of other countries to provide funding for AIDS and TB and malaria drugs. So that's one that's got a track record.
What kind of money has been, at least in words, committed so far to this fair share approach?
At this point in time, a number of countries have come forward with mostly sort of bilateral or a small group of countries put forward some money for the short-term needs. And then we've seen countries come forward. So that's kind of for the immediate. Then when we look at the post-2012, so what we're hoping to get out of this new climate agreement, countries at this point have mostly put proposals on the table. Now, a group like the EU has said, yes, we will do our fair share, and they've done some math to try and quantify what that is. It's kind of in the same type of analysis that our report did for Canada. One of the big question marks at this point is the U.S. Under Barack Obama, they've come to the table at the climate negotiations very serious. You know, they said, we're back, we want to be leaders, but they're still getting their policies together, and so that's going to be an important player. The developing countries have put a whole number of proposals on the table for, you know, generating the money, for managing it, for how to disperse it in a way that's fair and equitable. Countries like Norway and Switzerland have also come up with some really interesting proposals about generating the money. So there's just been a lot of countries thinking about how to make this work and coming up with the commitments. Now, it hasn't been, you know, although there's been a lot of activity, the timeline is really tight because we do need to get to this new agreement in December. So I think there needs to be even more work, and particularly on the Canadian side. Canada just has not been a constructive player on this issue so far.
You, in fact, in that regard, filed a Freedom of Information request and got some briefing document from Foreign Affairs. What did that tell you?
Mm-hmm. That was really interesting because I've been following the international negotiations, and Canada has just been sort of playing down this issue, minimizing it, saying, well, you know, there's some existing funds out there. That's different than what they're saying internally. So in the briefing note that we got back, they acknowledge that the costs of adaptation, and I'm quoting, are estimated to be extremely high, that the existing funds that are out there, again, quoting, are widely criticized as being underfunded, and then, you know, this is maybe my favorite, that addressing adaptation now is more affordable than the cost of inaction. So there is an understanding by some people inside of the government that this issue is really critical, and that the costs are going to be very high and that Canada needs to play a role there. But they haven't reflected that at all yet in their public position. And so I think that really needs to change urgently between now and Copenhagen so that Canada can be part of the solution instead of part of the problem.
And I understand you're calling for quote-unquote down payment on the Copenhagen agreement in advance of that. What does that amount to?
So that's right, because like I said, most of the money is going to flow after 2012, but some countries are already facing very urgent adaptation needs that they haven't been able to fund, and this is the least developed countries. And so there's already been a process for the UN, through the Climate Convention, asked these countries to identify what are your most urgent needs and how much would it cost to meet them. And so far, they haven't been able to raise the money needed to actually meet those needs. And so I said, as a down payment on the bigger deal that we're going to get, hopefully, out of Copenhagen, Canada should come to the table with our fair share of the $1.5 billion, which countries have identified as their most urgent needs. Our share would be about 80 million Canadian. And so I said, you know, at a minimum, Canada should make that commitment in the short term to restore some credibility and goodwill as we head into this negotiation for the bulk of the financial need.
Well, thank you very much for illuminating this issue for us, Claire.
Thanks so much for having me.
Bye.
Bye now.
I've been speaking with Claire Demers. She is Associate Director of the Climate Change Program at the Pembina Institute, and she's author of the report, Our Fair Share. You can find a link to that report on our website at cooperadio.org/redeye.